Hello and welcome to the Bones Horror Podcast. This is episode 60, Hellraiser. In Morocco, Frank Cotton buys a puzzle box from a dealer. He fucked up. Now, how are we all?
All good, all good.
Clearest I could get my voice, and we'll talk about that in a minute. So we've got Larry with us tonight.
Hello.
And we've got Ewan.
Hello.
And Jess.
Hello.
Right. I can't really see Jess. It's gone blurry. This last week, we did a podcast a couple of weeks ago with Paul and Stephen because they were moaning at me to do one. So I don't know if you've heard it, guys.
I have. I was particularly entertained. I mean, they're very funny, that those two. But it's funny how they refer to Lawrence and I as the intellectuals. I was quite flattered by that.
Well, Paul seems to think because you hold your mic that you're appearing in some like in Beirut or something. He finds that quite
Baghdad, I think, was the I also loved your Kev's explanation of Thomas the Tank Engine. I think that was that's a serious highlight.
Yeah.
So that's what our podcasts quite often like that, to be honest, where they try and get me to explain something, or it would just be Paul being silly, and it's just a bit of fun. But as you can tell, they both don't like horror films, so it's always made it a bit tricky.
It was a good film as well. Like they
it is a good film. Yeah, I don't know if they liked it. I don't know if they did.
Good little twist. We always love a twist.
It had a nice twist in it. So,
yeah.
I lost you a little bit then. Hopefully, I can still hear you later.
Hopefully.
This last week, I came down with COVID last Saturday. I tested positive, so literally I had to do like 10 days isolation. I'm allowed out tomorrow, so I wasn't very well at all this week. So I really haven't done anything. Haven't worked. Just been dying, as you can imagine. It was a bit of a rough time, and there were some people on Twitter said some nice words from the final guys and Dave from Sweden. So thank you for that. Kept me going. So today is pretty much the first day I've actually felt half decent. So I was a bit worried about doing the podcast, whether I'd be up for it, but here I am. So you guys, what have you been up to? Because we haven't done a podcast, for at least 3 weeks, right?
Mm.
Was it The Empty Man, the last one, I think?
Mm.
So, Larry, how's the miniatures going? No dinosaur on the bed tonight, I see.
No. Still continuing writing, mainly like looking after dogs and stuff. I was supposed to put a script recently into one of our chats, but I have taken more time because I wasn't happy with the ending. So it will get there. It is basically done. So it is coming.
Has it got a twist in it at the end?
It does. We love a twist. We love a twist. There's always got to be a twist.
Yeah.
You know, there's always got to be a good twist. That's what I've been up to. Just writing, really.
I'd like to do that one day. I'd like to be able to write, basically. So, Ewan, I'm sure you've been to the cinema.
Yeah, well, I mean, so London Film Festival's just finished. And I had a great time. I mean, despite the fact I had to get up at about 5 a.m. on a fair few days, only because like you have to get in the queue early, pretty much, because people start queuing like early hours, like ridiculous hours, and like as I was getting up at, like 5 a.m. I was like feeling so smug that I was going to get there early and it was going to be like I'm going to be the first one in the queue and it's going to be great. And then you come around the corner at 7 a.m. and they're like 14 people there and you're just like, oh, okay. Oh. Not as dedicated as I thought, but no, it was great. It was a great festival. I think Spencer is probably the standout one for me, which is a weird one because it's the new sort of I wouldn't exactly call it biopic, but it's a new Princess Diana film. But it was weird because it was it felt more in common with The Shining than it did with The Crown, I thought, because it was just like just in terms of like it felt like a really ghostly environment, and a lot of the shots are very similar to Stanley Kubrick's thing. So it's more like a ghost movie than a royal drama. There's a lot of royal drama in it, but I also recommend that one, and I'll probably get to the others towards the end of the show. But no, enjoyed myself. It's good.
Jess?
Just working. That's it. Literally just working. Playing. There was a new MMO that came out. Can't remember if it was out when last time we were on. But New World. I'm playing that a lot. It's very popular. But other than that, nothing really. Nothing exciting.
Nothing exciting.
No.
Did you watch The Midnight Meat Train?
No.
No. That was exciting.
It's a good one. It's a good one.
It is.
I haven't seen it either.
You haven't? Oh, the twist.
No.
Yeah. There's a bit. There's a
and
very,
Thomas
very
the
good
Tank
twist.
Engine. He's part of the twist.
Yeah. I think that should be up for review next, because you said on the last podcast you haven't seen any of Thomas the Tank Engine, Kev. So I think maybe
I
next
have,
podcast.
No, I thought it was just like Midnight Meat Train. So.
Gee, imagine
with Ringo Starr voicing it. Yes.
Yeah.
So, Hellraiser is a 1987 film, the first of 10.
10?
Had a 10. Yeah.
Sorry, I didn't realize that.
Jesus.
Yeah, it's 10. We're going to do one a week for the next 10 weeks. So, at a budget of $1 million. Box office of $14 million. It was directed by Clive Barker. We all know who he is. Jess, did you know who he was before? Clive Barker?
I knew of.
Okay.
I knew the name.
He does write some strange stuff. Starred Claire Higgins as Julia, Ashley Lawrence as Kirsty, and Doug Bradley as Pinhead. After you've seen it, yeah? So, rotten, Jess. What are you thinking?
Well, I saw the star rating on Amazon and I was surprised. So I reckon it's going to be weirdly high. I'm going to say like 85.
Oh, you're in. What do you reckon?
Well, again, it's one of those things, isn't it, where I'm not sure if it was that well received when it came out, but it's since gained a cult following. So I'm going to say 72.
That's amazing.
I'm going to go a little bit higher and just say 75.
72.
Yeah, that's good. Oh, sorry. Wow. That is amazing. That is amazing. Sorry, but I've never got one of those things before.
Where have you,
is there a
send
prize?
Send you one of Stephen's Shepherd's pies. Yeah, like that. Yeah. He does love a shepherd's pie. So
great.
We'll get him to send you one of those.
Excellent.
So what is this film about? Now, I struggle with words sometimes to try and wrap my head around about what this film's meant to be about. There's, for some reason, there are people in this world who can't decipher between pleasure and pain. Is that right?
I think it's like the same.
They think it's
like
the same thing. And I know they're very different things. Yeah? Right?
From personal experience.
I would think most people would know this, yeah? But there are people in this world that go looking for something more. And the writer, Clive Barker, obviously, maybe he's experienced that, I don't know. But
yeah, well, I mean, Clive Barker, I did look into him before doing this podcast. He's quite an interesting guy, actually. I actually thought he was American at first, but he's not. He grew up in Liverpool, and he's sort of very British. And sort of looking into his history, he spent a lot of time in sort of BDSM clubs, which is not surprising, to be honest.
Getting kicked in the balls, I expect. Yeah.
And he was saying,
when I've read it, that's how it makes me think. He's been up to some stuff, that guy.
I would assume so. He talked about one experience about, like, sort of pertinent to Hellraiser. He talked about how he saw, like, you know, people putting pins in themselves and stuff and sort of deriving pleasure from that. So I think because the essentially the plot of the film is, it's bizarre in itself. A woman who had an affair, the man involved, he suddenly died, and then she manages accidentally to reanimate him in their attic because her husband suddenly cuts himself on a nail and pours his blood onto the attic wood, and therefore reanimates the corpse of her ex-lover. And in order to in order to create the full body self of him, the woman Julia has to bring men up to the attic in order for the reanimated corpse, so Frank, to essentially consume them and bring up more of his body to life,
become whole again. He wants to.
Yes.
He's still trapped, isn't he, though? Like, after he's died, he's still there with them, isn't he? Like, his soul is still with them.
With the
Cenobites. Because he escaped, because he says multiple times, doesn't he, to her, like, he can't go back. Because it's almost like if they find him again. But I always, it might just be an interpretation thing, but I always think that, like, his soul's stuck there.
Yeah. That's another thing with it's interesting, again, watching it again. It's always interesting because the Cenobites have become a very sort of, you know, a pop cultural image. And, you know, everyone kind of recognizes Pinhead from something. It's weird that they only come in at the sort of the last half hour of the film. And I think only Pinhead is only given, it's like 8 minutes. He wasn't even called Pinhead, actually, initially. I think that was a fan name that eventually went into the series.
Yeah. Well, they were as well. There was if I remember correctly, I don't think they were going to use actual, like, actors in their part. They were just going to use, like, stand-in doubles to not do any of the dialogue. But then they decided beforehand, after Clive Barker had a talk with the matey who plays Pinhead, and they had said, like, you can bring a lot of volume and a lot of character just in those kind of the way you move and stuff. So they then changed it to actually bringing in actors to play those parts and sitting through, like, you know, hours of makeup and all that, which I think is such a good decision because he's kind of become like a pop icon, like a horror icon, you know, that similar to, like, Chucky and Ghostface. And stuff.
Especially in, like, you know, the 80s, that sort of 80s horror vibe. And yeah, I find him quite scary because there's no sort of humanity there. It's sort of just utterly, utterly evil. Although I think I read somewhere that there was some deliberation as to whether he's actually a villain or not. But I mean, for my money, at least on this film, he seems like a very villainous type to me.
Yeah.
So the Cenobites
as well.
So what are the Cenobites then? I wrote down their extra dimensional beings from the Order of the Gash. Which, why is it called the Order of the Gash? I don't get it again.
I assume they mean in a wound sense rather than...
I'd hope so. But it's... wasn't Pinhead meant to be a woman? Was that written in there? Someone said
it didn't in the books. I don't think the book specific. I believe the I might get this wrong, but it's either that in the book it's not specified, but it is more towards that of a woman, but it's never really specified, if I remember correctly. Because in the new series, they've recast it now to a woman.
Yeah. So by David Gordon Green, the new series, who did the new Halloween films. So that'll be interesting. And he's doing it at the same time.
Well, that should be really good then. At least 20 minutes of it would be good anyway.
Yeah. But also, weirdly, is that there's also a new Hellraiser movie coming out at pretty much exactly the same time, but then unrelated to each other. So that'll be an interesting... They'll probably release them at different times, I don't know.
One's on Hulu, isn't it? One's a Hulu series.
One's an HBO series, and I think the Hulu is a Hulu film.
Right, okay, Yeah, it'd be interesting. It's just they just can't do what they've been what doing they in the sequels.
Now, running through this now, there was a couple of little bullet points I'll put in. Has Frank got a different voice?
It's played by a different actor. I only found out that recently, in that the human Frank...
It don't match up.
The human Frank is a different actor to the monstrified Frank.
Right.
I don't know why they made that decision, but it's...
I even thought his voice might be different. The human one you see is a different voice. So is that what you mean? Is that the voice from the...
It's been ADR, doesn't it? Is that what you mean?
It just don't sound right to me.
Maybe they just looked the footage back and just thought, like, maybe something's not working, and they've decided to
dub it.
But that's the interesting thing about what you're saying about dubbing, because they had initially the production of the film was initially going to be in Britain, and then for some reason the American producers were like, no, we want to do it in America, which you can kind of see when there are like two British actors in the film. Even though it's an American film, and you're like, why are they British? Again, this is before I knew Clive Barker was British, and that makes sense that it was moved to Britain. But also, they apparently ADR the dialogue to sound more American. So that might be the reason.
Is it in America then filmed? Because that house looked English, British.
I think they shot it in America, but you're right. I think a lot of it's funny. I think Clive Barker was like, well, we don't, there was something like quintessentially English about it, but they had to move it to America because I think they had to, like, I don't know, something about investors or whatever. But yeah, it is.
I was going to say, probably did it down to cost or something.
Maybe.
The guy in the pet shop.
The homeless guy.
Yeah, he's obviously quite hungry. Mm-hmm. Was he he's not a Cenobite, but he's obviously working for a darker power. I don't know how that works, but he's on Earth. That confused me slightly, especially when he turned into a winged beast.
Yeah,
we didn't see that coming. But right at the end, me and Rob were like, what just happened? What did we just witness?
So that does mean that potentially there is a darkness that lives on the Earth, and obviously the other darkness you can only get into by doing a puzzle box, which is a bit confusing as well. I don't know how many puzzle boxes there are meant to be in the world. Was it just the one? Or
I think in the first
is
one,
it
it's
down to interpretation
to
again, Larry?
No, I think in the first one, it's meant to just be one. But then as sequels have gone on, I'm pretty sure they changed some of that. But it depends which sequels you count, you know, which ones you like. Like for me, it's the three. Even though I'm not a big fan of the third one, I think that it's a trilogy of films, and then it kind of stops for me. Whereas they just continue and continue and continue and continue. Yes.
After three. I also wrote down that the engineer is the leader of the Order of the Gash, which I read about. Okay. Now, he's the funny engineer. The engineer's the funny-looking fella who chases her, Kirsty, down the halls a bit. I think in the hospital.
Yeah, that was a weird one.
He's meant to be the leader, the one who's got like a weird head thing. But
And then
it's just weird looking. Now he's meant to be the leader of the Cenobites.
Is that right?
Yeah, the engineer. So I wrote that
down. I just thought he was like. I mean, maybe this is explained in the sequels, but it's kind of like, I don't know. I just interpreted it as this kind of monster that was just there, you know, just to add some conflict to the to that situation. I don't know.
In the sequels, certain people that get killed by the Cenobites then turn into Cenobites themselves by using like so usually the way like they've like died or like had some form of connection to. I believe there's someone in. I want to say it's the third one where he's into like CDs and he gets like CDs shoved in his head. Like they all fly. And then he becomes, and in the second one, there's the doctor who like gets taken to the realm of hell. And then he becomes like almost, he takes over the Cenobites for a brief while. It's massively like it gets more intense. The second one is personally like, I think the one that it does the most with the material. And I think the first one's a great opener and it's very subtle and it's very to the point. And you know, it's made creepy that way. But I think one is like the subtle one, two is the over the top, but great one. And then three is just the kind of, it just takes it too far. It really does.
So before we get the end of this film, I want your opinion, Jess. Did you like any of this at all?
It wasn't bad. I did enjoy it to an extent. I just didn't find it scary or anything at all. I found it quite comical. There was a couple of moments where there was like some gore and I was like, gross, but other than that,
I didn't like the hook in the skin very much.
Yeah, Jesus wept.
I could see that it would just look too much like clay for me to...
Yeah.
But some of the effects I thought were surprisingly like really good for, you know, for that time.
Yeah, they were sort of quite thingish at times, weren't they?
Yeah, when he's coming out of the floor.
Yeah.
I thought that looked really good. And you could tell like certain parts that were like stop motion and then... But it still looked really good. So, whereas other parts looked a bit weird, considering. So,
the Cenobites look good as well. I think they came out quite good. Is it the Chatterer? That's my favourite one. The one that like, he's going like.
I did find it a bit weird that looking back at kind of like the '80s, what is it with that time period and films having weird fleshy creatures? Why was that such a big thing?
Well, I think it was like David Cronenberg, right, and sort of body horror and stuff like that, which kind of kicked off. I mean, the same with The Thing, I guess. I think people were just like, I don't know, some of the horror films got really, really obsessed with the body and how it can be sort of mutated and changed and everything like that. And I think probably Hellraiser is part of that. And you know, because it works with sort of Clive Barker's BDSM stuff, it kind of lends itself to that, I guess.
Just him coming up with the idea after BDSM thoughts, like, this would be great. God knows what he went through.
Okay, so I've said enough about this. We're 25 minutes in, which ain't bad. I'm sure you've got some bits to say, Larry. Did you enjoy it? Obviously, you've probably watched this a few times, like I have.
Yeah, I think we actually have the same box set. Arrow video.
It's a nice box set. So there's a lot on it.
Yeah.
Yeah.
It's good. Like, I think what I think it does well is it taps into that fear of like the unknown again. So I'm a huge fan of H.P. Lovecraft, and I love how with those his books, it's always the fear of the unknown, things that we don't understand, like the puzzle box. I think when I first watched it, well, I say probably not on my exact first viewing, but when I watched it a while back, I used to think, oh, well, if someone picks up this box and just kind of solves it, they're screwed. Like, but then what rewatching it, I kind of get the impression that the box knows, like, to yourself if you want that. Because, like, obviously the lover that the guy, that the woman was seeing, he obviously wanted that and dabbled with that and then regretted his wish. And then, it, you know, towards the end where the main character needs them to come back so that then she can kind of make that deal. I think that that's also looked into great. My only issue is that, and it's not specifically to do with the film, is just I wish that in future and with these new ones that are coming out, I know Clive Barker is involved with one of them and he's producing it. So I just hope that they can update it a bit and make it, you know, not delve too far away, which the other sequels have, because the other sequels get so bad. So like so bad.
Yeah. Yeah. It's just madness. No, I don't get it. How they could be so bad. It's hopefully they don't do that. But I don't know how much they can do with it. Is that torture porn stuff, is that still about, really? Who watches it? Do you see what I mean? Are they going to go down that route still?
If it can be used in a good way with a good story and it's used to push forward the narrative, then yes. Like, I know a lot of people don't like, for instance, like Hostel, but Hostel was one of those films for me where I was like, the premise alone is quite scary because it's a fear that I think everyone's thought about. Like, oh, if you go on holiday and you stay somewhere that you're not exactly too sure of, and you know what I mean? Like, and it delves into that. And the body horror just serves as a nice, like, a cherry on top in that film to say, oh, this is what's going on. Same with Hellraiser. They, in the first one, they use it quite well because it's only like hinted at and it's kind of left to your imagination. Whereas as they've gone on with the films, they kind of have gone, oh, let's just show all of it, but we'll have a really crap story where it's a character who's really stupid and just wants to delve into it for no reason. And it just ends up hour and a half runtime just being effects that look worse than this first film, which surprises me as well. So, yeah, hopefully. Okay. Hopefully they do it right.
So, shall we move on to bonus on this? Yeah.
We have such sights to show you.
Right.
That combined with bonus.
Yeah.
Yes. You know what? I found it quite funny today. Did I send you what D put on Twitter? He put on there, we have such bonus to show you. Which I thought...
Nice.
Pointing at our podcast. I thought that was great. So we need to do something with that. I'm going to give it 8. It still entertains me. The first one, it still scares me. It was the film I watched it when I was about 15 and it took me a long, long time to revisit it because I think actually it did scare me. And not many things do really, but this film did. And I think it's to do with the ripping of the skin and all that stuff. I don't like it particularly. But the Cenobites and that are amazing. And they're so dark, so scary. And as a teenage, you know, 15-year-old still at school, it scared the shit out of me. So I'm going to give it an 8. I think I've become a bit more... it doesn't really scare me anymore. I take it for what it is. But it did take me a good 10, 15 years to revisit this one. Just because it was like, oh... Before I even watch the second or third one. So 8 for me. Jess?
I'd give it a 6. I didn't hate it, but it was just a bit meh.
Oh, no,
tears, please. It's a waste of good suffering.
Harry. No.
I'd give it a 7, a solid 7, because
solid.
Yeah, it's a solid boner of 7. It's good. I think it's still creepy, and I think it is probably one of the best of the trilogy that deals with that unknown factor and mystery. But yeah, the second one is the one that I respond to the most, just because of how batshit it gets. So,
that is batshit as well, isn't it? It really is.
Yeah,
batshit. Yeah, so did you watch that recently?
I watched the trilogy, just we'll one talk after
about
the
that
other.
In a bit then. Yeah, we'll talk about that in a bit. You win.
I'm going to give it a 7. I mean, it's quite interesting when you look at the sort of the premise of it, in that it's essentially a really, really horny woman who is desperate to have sex again with her old lover because it was so good that she's willing to murder in order to reanimate his corpse. It's a very, it's almost pornographic in a weird way. It's really strange.
Yeah.
But I kind of enjoyed how silly it was, and I think it is incredibly creepy as well as horrible, and I think that's the interesting thing with Clive Barker. I haven't read any of his stuff, but the film of Candyman, which I think is a better film, but you've got that kind of really horrible atmosphere where you're just like, you're seeing all these grisly things happen, and you're just like, it's very different to a lot of the, you know, modern torture porn, where it's like literally just showing you, like, you know, limbs being cut off and stuff. I think with the sort of Clive Barker atmosphere, it's far more, it kind of settles in. I think like the opening images of like maggots like squirming around are quite pertinent to the atmosphere that he wants to create. And I think that's quite effective. Again, it is cheesy, and I think also that the last half hour kind of makes that film. If it didn't have that last half hour, I'm not sure if it would be as good or as revered as it is, but because the last half hour is really good, I think it's really good. So yeah, 7 for me.
Nice. Yeah. So that's a 7 bonus. It's not bad. It's pretty solid.
Yep.
It's Halloween week. So,
which Clive Barker would like.
Totally. So let's move on to what we watch this week.
What have you been watching?
No, seriously, what have you been watching?
Oh, don't play it again. Okay. Should we start?
Yes.
With me?
Mm-hmm.
Go ahead.
Right. I won't do the H kills yet. Talking of brutal films, it was an afternoon last week. I was feeling really done in, like really quite poorly. So I thought, you know what? To cheer me up, I'll stick on Eden Lake.
I haven't seen that one.
It's good. Has a good twist.
Is that the one with Thomas Turgoose, the guy from This Is England, in?
Yes.
It has the blonde lad as well.
Ah.
Yeah. You're on about the little blonde lad?
Yeah.
Yeah, he's in it.
Michael Fassbender's in it as well.
Yeah. Is he really?
Yeah.
Yeah, he's very good in it. They're all really good in it, actually. It's a British film. It's about a couple who go on holiday to... Where are they? I can't remember whereabouts they are.
Eden Lake.
I'm not sure where Eden Lake is. It looks really nice, which makes me think it's not in London, but it's...
I actually don't know. I think it's like, it's like kind of countryside area, isn't it?
I was going to have a look, but I can't see the deep Blu-ray. Does it say? Doesn't say. It's like in the countryside. So they go to this place, and there's a nice, obviously, Eden Lake there, and there's woods and things, and they just come across some not very nice young people, I would say, 16, 17, 18 maybe a bit younger, some of them.
The worst.
Yeah. And have you seen it, Jess?
No.
No. They're really very unpleasant kids. And anyway, I won't ruin it for you, but yeah, it's quite a nasty film in places, and you're really rooting for the good guys the whole time, and you want these kids to die. I think that's how I felt. So if you haven't seen it, Jess, watch it, but it is pretty brutal. There's some nasty stuff in it. Kind of survival horror, is it? I would call it.
With a bit of a twist
at the end, and we love a twist. So I watched Eden Lake. Then I watched Halloween Kills. And I know we all want to discuss this, other than Jess. Halloween Kills. How I think the storyline, I don't think there is one particularly, other than a town banding together to get rid of Michael. But it's not happening. I think the kills are superb. I know there was complaints he killed firemen, but that's what happens, isn't it? He just kills whoever he wants to kill.
Yeah,
he don't give
I was
a fuck.
Say, it's
we,
a horror.
He don't care.
I didn't realize that there were complaints that he killed firemen.
Yeah, yeah. People were complaining.
Minutes, they wanted to take it out.
Homophobic, and he's homophobic because of the way he killed Big John and Little John.
No, the murderer is homophobic. What?
Yeah, can you imagine? Yeah. He doesn't care. He's literally just going into a bigger problem there,
to be honest.
Jesus. He's
literally just going into the house because it was his house. He wasn't going on a hate crime.
But that's what people are making out to be. All of a sudden, like, no one likes Michael Myers anymore. You know, because
not because he murders.
He's a homophobic and he kills firemen, firefighters.
He also kills kids in this as well, doesn't he? That's not the problem here. Does he kill animals as well?
I don't know. I just think there were some good bits in it. There was some people I haven't seen before. There was the guy from Weird Science was in it. Thought he was good. Do you know what that is, Jess?
No. It's a great film.
Isn't that when kids like breed a woman?
They make a woman because they can't get a girl, so they make a woman like using loads of different things and
pictures. They put it in the printer. Don't know.
Yeah.
Isn't it from the '90s or something?
They put it in a sketch.
It's very
the
funny.
Best bits of a woman. Don't know. They put the boobs on, the legs, the face, and then they make this woman who's like everything they want. And it anyway. What's his name? The blonde lad from that. He plays. One of the characters. And,
from Breakfast Club as well.
Yeah, Breakfast Club and many other films. I thought it was all right. I don't think it was as good as the first one. I thought the first one was great. The first of this new trilogy anyway. But I'm really quite interested on your thoughts. Because there isn't really a storyline, is there? I think it's just the middle filler of this trilogy. It could have been half hour long, really.
Well, it's interesting because I went back to watch the 2018 Halloween, and I actually didn't like it as much when I watched it the first time. I actually quite enjoyed it the first time, but then next time, I suppose because I knew like everything that was going to happen, it was just the surprises didn't surprise me anymore, and it was just fine. And then I watched the second one, and I actually wonder if I preferred this one to the previous one, but only because hang on, I'm not completely saying this is a good film at all. It's very much a 3-star or 6-boner film for me.
But
it's sort of like it's because it to me it was like because of how it's filmed. It's filmed very well, and there was also an aspect of the story where It's essentially gathering the troops, so gathering the community together in order to fight and kill Michael Myers. Now, I was quite interested in that aspect of the story because I just don't think I've ever seen that in that kind of film before, because it's usually like the incidents are usually isolated to specific people's homes and you don't really see the general community. And I thought that was like quite an interesting piece of world building. And I think it's quite, when it turns sort of midway through, it turns into a sort of angry mob. And it's kind of, I don't know, this may be giving it too much importance to it, but I think it was quite interesting to see that because of, like, you know, what's been happening in the news and everything, and, you know, stuff that's happening at the Capitol. And it's quite interesting to see psychologically how that sort of develops. And I'm sure that that's not, that's putting too much intelligence to what could be a sort of base level horror film. But I just found that aspect interesting. But there are lots of things which I just didn't like, and mainly because the Laurie Strode thread just felt really underdeveloped, and it just sort of, I mean, she's in a coma for a lot of it. And I think the thing that made the previous film quite good was that Jamie Lee Curtis was just great, as she always is in everything, but she was just great as playing Laurie Strode. But it was kind of like, but it was weird because I thought the filmmaking was quite good. It was like eating a really lovely bloody steak, but one that's like loaded with teeth. Do you know what I mean? It's sort of like, oh, this is a great scene, but then you bite into it like, oh god, no, I don't like that. That was rubbish, and then it goes back to it. So it was a bit sort of flip flop for me. But I'm sure Lawrence has some contrary thoughts.
It was bad. It was. If I can summarize it, and I'll try and be very quick. Number one, when you, like, 101 of writing, when we're following a story, we need somebody that we can at least follow the story through. And in the 2018 one, that character's Laurie again. Like, you know, we have other characters that we look at different perspectives from, but Laurie is what grounds that from her perspective. In this film, they have this weird opening of the police officer who was from the 2018 one, who everyone was like, yeah, he's dead. He's dead. And he just comes back alive and he's like, I'm the one who has to kill Michael Myers. And you're like, and your instant thought is like, oh, okay. Weird choice, but maybe we're going to look at it from this perspective. No. It's then show, like, the whole film, and I was crying with laughter at one point because every 5 seconds they'd be like, they would literally go, whoa, look, who's this person? And they'd show up on the screen and it would be like, whoa, that person, when they were five, ran into Michael Myers for like 5 seconds and he's haunted by him. And then someone else would walk on, they'd be like, whoa, do you know who that is? They'd be like, who? We'd be like, that's Tommy. Did you know that he was basically the kid from the original Halloween? You're like, no, I didn't know that. And they're like, hey, look at that person. That's the nurse that encountered Michael Myers for five seconds. Yeah. And I'm like, And look, I'm sorry, this is going to be a spoiler, Jess. I don't think it's going to ruin it for you because I think you'll see it coming. Mm-hmm. They have these people come into it for them just to be killed off within 5 seconds of screen time. There are characters in this that are so stupid that you look at it and go, what is going on? Like, the writing is like, they're like, and it, what annoys me is it's by, I think it was written as well by Danny McBride. And the 2018 one, I was like,
yeah, co-written.
This is like a good push back into it, like a good, like almost like Force Awakens. It's a nice, it's maybe retreading old ground, but it's got enough new stuff in there where you can go, okay, well, the next one, I can't wait to see what they do. This has no story. It is laughable. If you have a drink every time a character goes, it's been 40 years! or if you have a drink when a character goes, evil dies tonight.
Dies tonight.
Every character. And like, I think to sum it up, there are, like, I can forgive a bit of a plot that's all over the show, but when you have characters that do something stupid, but it's not just one character, it's every character. For as an example, they there's this guy outside and they're at the Michael Myers house and they know Michael Myers is inside. And this guy's like, I'm going in by myself. And the two people who he's with are like, no, no, that's stupid. And he goes, no, I ran into Michael Myers age 40 years ago when I was 5, and I kind of encountered him, but I didn't really encounter him. So I've got to do this alone. 30 seconds later, he's shoved in an attic, like broken in pieces. And you're just like, then there's Big John and Little John. That, like, that to me, I thought that they were going to have some setup to something bigger. Like, I thought it was going to be like, but there is a laughable moment when Michael Myers is up in the room looking out the window, which is another plot point where they're like, he didn't come here to look out the window, came to look at himself. It's like, look in a mirror then. But it's laughable because one of these characters goes up, sees him in their house after knowing that their husband or boyfriend at least has had his skull crushed, and yet will look at him and then go, Michael, oh, you've come home. And it's just like, what? I just think it's so stupid. And I know that they're trying to say it's a trilogy, but if this is the quality that we're going to get for the next one, which is apparently going to have a time jump, I really don't want to see it. Like, I just don't. I think they really need to stick to... They've made Michael Myers not scary, in my opinion, anymore.
Yeah, I would agree with that. There's also a weird thing, like, I don't know, he's become less interesting simply because he's become quite invincible. And I think that invincibility kind of removes much conflict. He's like a kind of supervillain in some ways that just can't be killed. Especially with that, yeah.
Well, yeah, sorry, to your point, though, exactly, completely agree with you, because in the original Halloween, when it ends, one of the scariest moments of that film is they shoot him, and you think, oh, they've got him, and it just cuts back to where he was laying, and he's gone. It never gives you any explanation. Yeah. It's just, oh shit, he's gone. This film opens up with showing you where Michael Myers went, and he's just walking around like some backyards, like... Oh shit. And no character can shoot a weapon and aim in this film. Every character cannot use a weapon. They miss at every point, and it's just laughable. It's a joke, in my opinion. And I really, the kills were all right, but then, like, as we just mentioned a moment ago, you watch this great opening sequence where he kills all these firefighters, and it is shot really well, and you're like, it's intense. And people have now complained about it, going, we can't kill firefighters. It's like, I'm pretty sure he also kills a police officer in this, but that's fine.
Yeah.
That's okay. But so it's a horror film. So, like, I don't know.
Yeah. That's it. Right.
Odd.
Okay. So you didn't like it that much.
No.
Last couple of things. Obviously, I've been sat in my office for this last week. So I finished playing Little Hope, which was a recommendation from you, Larry. The other one's been delivered to me as well now, so that's sat there ready to go. The new one, what's it called? Seems a bit,
I know,
like,
what, yeah,
yeah. Anyway, it's been delivered. But because I've got a PlayStation now, I thought, so I ordered Until Dawn, and I've been playing that now, which is by the same people, I presume. It certainly looks the same.
Yeah, I think so.
So I've been playing that, which is a story about some guys, that two sisters go missing. They come back a year later to look for them. It's in some kind of, it's like a ski resort kind of place. And it's one of those games where you have to make decisions and press buttons at the right time, blah, blah, blah. And it always the game. And it's, I love it. It's not too hectic for my brain. I can do it at my own pace. So, loving that. So that's pretty much what I've been doing. There are lots of other things I've watched, but I'm not going to talk about it all. I want to keep it under an hour today. So, Jess, you've not watched anything, have you?
I have, actually. I have. In the past week, I've watched all of season 3 of You, which just came out.
Not seen that.
I was really excited for this season because of the setting and everything. It's a whole new beginning, family life, you know. And I've seen a lot of people complaining about it. I quite enjoyed it for the most part, but it's felt like it ended really abruptly. And it felt a bit short to me. And I just wasn't overly happy with the ending. It could have gone better, but I won't spoil anything. But I do think for the most part, it was quite good in my opinion. But yeah. And then there's going to be a season four. But the way they've set it up for season four, I don't know if I'm going to be that interested. So yeah, other than that, no, I haven't watched anything else.
I did finish Midnight Mass.
I haven't seen that yet.
Yeah, I've held off on that as well because I want to just binge watch it all.
Yeah, I'm going to binge watch it next week.
Yeah. I won't say too much then. Although I quite enjoyed it. Larry, what have you watched?
I watched Dune. I thought that was fantastic. Gave it 5 stars. Or 10 out of 10 boners, but that's because I think the director Denis, I can never pronounce his last name.
I think it's Villeneuve.
He just has a way of kind of like what Ridley Scott does with world building, except unlike Ridley Scott, he can follow it up with good storytelling every time, in my opinion. Like, you know, his Arrival, Blade Runner 2049.
What was that?
June.
You broke June. Yeah. Okay, I thought you. Yeah.
Yeah.
Okay, I haven't seen it yet.
Yeah, it's great. But like again, I didn't know this until Ewan actually told me, which was I think it was a while back now. But I didn't realize it was split into two parts. I thought that this was the whole film, but then as soon as you get the gist at the beginning when it says part one, but
yeah.
I think it's very. Smart. It's a clever idea to split it into because it fits into this first half, what it's going to follow up with the second half, I can't wait because there's so much stuff that they haven't included yet, like for the second part that I really eagerly want to see that. I'm rewatching The Sopranos again.
It's my favorite series of all time, so I'm very
it's fantastic, and I won't say it, but like. I love how that series ends as well, how it concludes. Mm. So I'm rewatching it because my dad hasn't seen it. So we're going through it all. And I cannot wait until that, you know, starts continuing on to certain points where it's just like, oh. What else did I watch? I watched VHS 1994 or whatever it was called. That was really good. It's on YouTube for free. I think I sent the link to you guys in the WhatsApp chat.
I've got it on Shudder.
I was surprised it's just on YouTube.
Yeah, I've started it. One of the little
it's
ones
good.
Walked in as I was watching. It's quite. Something happened at the beginning. And I had to switch it off. So
it's quite out there. But like it's. It actually is out of the VHS series because I quite like the VHS, what they've done in the past. I wasn't too keen on the third one that they did, but I like the first two. This I see as the third one for me. So those three films, I would say check them out because they're good fun. They're not meant to be anything serious. And they all have like nice twists in them. They are basically like short horror films that people have just put together and gone, oh, this is my take on this and this is my take. And they're good. I don't think there's really anything else. Have I watched anything else? No, I don't think so. I think that's it. I think, unless I'm forgetting something major, but yeah.
Ewan?
Yeah. So I thought I'd just mention Last Night in Soho, which showed at the London Film Festival. It's coming out next Friday, so on the 29th of October, in the UK at least. So it's Edgar Wright's new film, and everyone's sort of eagerly eagerly anticipated to watch it. It's really good. So it follows a fashion student who moves to London from Cornwall, and she suddenly has these dreams in which she suddenly travels to the 1960s, in which she becomes Anya Taylor-Joy, sort of with at sort of the nightclubs of Soho in London. And I found it really, really good. There are a few sort of problems with it, mainly like there's like one of the characters is like one of her friends is a bit, I don't know, not really fleshed out, and he seems like only there to be a sort of functional shoulder to cry on in some ways. And also there's like talking of twists, the twist is like really easy to see, but other than that, it's really good. It's quite scary, and it's quite interesting seeing how horror films are dealing with these aren't modern issues, but they're issues that only have come to the fore recently. So there's like a kind of, I wouldn't go so far as to call it a Me Too narrative, but there's certainly a kind of, in terms of how women were treated, especially back in the 60s, it's kind of going into that sort of the undergrowth of idealized time. So the main character is like really idolizes the 60s and really loves it, but then in her dream she sees all the bad stuff that was happening at the time. And then in the third act, in proper sort of Edgar Wright fashion, it goes like completely insane. And I think that's great. And I really enjoyed it. So that's Last Night in Soho. As I say, Halloween Kills, but we all know about that. And I finished Dexter. I finished my epic rewatch of Dexter with the last season. I mean, the last season of Dexter is definitely the worst. But it's funny, I did rewatch it, and it wasn't as bad as I was anticipating the rewatch to be. It's not good, but it's not bad. And then Charlotte Rampling, the addition of Charlotte Rampling, it certainly does wonders, because she's great and she's always good at playing sort of dark and weird old women. so it's always good. The last episode was good. Well, it was all right until the last sort of 5 minutes or so, which are just like one some of the worst minutes of television ever sort of put to screen. But I'm really looking forward to the new one, which is coming out in a few weeks.
I hope will
rectify a lot of those problems. I've also seen June, and I didn't like it as much as Lawrence did, but I thought it was just a sort of a great spectacle of a sci-fi movie. And I'm slightly annoyed about certain comments about it, certain reviews about it that sort of compare it to Lord of the Rings and things like that, because I just don't feel like, and this may be just because I have a strong emotional attachment to Lord of the Rings, I just don't think that June has the emotional sort of capacity, or at least it doesn't actually at least compare to Lord of the Rings, and nor with sort of that the character development I thought was a bit basic as well. I mean, I've read the book and I thought that about the book as well, so I think it's the book's fault rather than Denis Villeneuve's. But just for purely just to like sit there and watch it, if you're going to watch it on the biggest screen possible with the best sound system, because you just get so overawed by the spectacle of it, and the way that Villeneuve like treats obviously big things, but also small things like the like it's all about spice, which is like a valuable resource in this sort of galactic empire, and it's on this desert planet called Dune or Arrakis, and the opening shot is basically just like a massive sand dune with a breeze coming across it, and you see the sparkles or something, and those sparkles are spice, and it's such a beautiful opening shot, and you can sort of see how Villeneuve just focuses on like very delicate things and very big things at the same time, and it's just it's a very good experience. And also, just quickly, I got a PlayStation 5 recently, which I'm nice, very excited
yes.
about.
I did see this.
Well done.
It was so exciting to get it, because I've been waiting about a year in order to get it, and I finally got it, and I got a 4K TV and everything, so it's working well. And I finished Miles Morales, which is a great little game. I actually expected it to be longer, but I kind of, in retrospect, that was a silly idea, because Spider-Man has only really recently come out. But it's a lovely story. I mean, I think they sort of nicked a few things from like Last of Us 2, just not overwhelming, but sort of like in terms of the gameplay and stuff, it was just like, oh yeah, they're flashing back to that to a crucial point, and that, so a few narrative devices nicked from Last of Us 2, but I thought other than that it was very good. And also I'm replaying Death Stranding, which is
I love that game
and maybe one of my favorite games of all time, and I've been waiting to play it again to put on the PS5 because the director's cut recently came out. It stars Norman Reedus in this kind of dystopian world in which they have to sort of try and connect the United States has turned into the United Cities of America because everything's just been blown up, and so that his job is to try and connect all the cities together. And it's like 60 hours of gameplay. It's a Hideo Kojima game, so it's quite sort of out there, but it's so great. And I just like, loads of people have been bored by it because a lot of people just think it, and maybe rightly so, it's just walking from one destination to another, and yes, that's true, and I get why people are like frustrated with that, but I just really like it because it just feels like so sort of transcendental in a weird way. I just like walking across these like vast landscapes and just like looking at them and just like that's my jam, really.
Didn't someone review it saying like it's the best Amazon Prime delivery game that you can play?
Yeah, and it's like Jesus. Yeah, because you play a postal worker, and it's just great. You know, I love it. Love it. It's great.
Go play.
It is a good game. It's just like, for me, it's just long. But then if you can invest your time into it, it's great.
Exactly. Yeah.
Okay. We're at the hour point. We didn't discuss what we're going to watch next time we're on here. Whose pick was this today? Was it mine? It was, wasn't it? I'll open up to any of you. If there's something you want us all to watch. Whose pick is it, do you think? I can't even remember.
I have no clue.
Who did Empty Man? Is that you, Larry?
I think I recommended Empty Man. So yeah, I'd use that as probably my one.
So Jess or Ewan?
I can go.
Go on, Ewan.
Okay, I'm wondering what people will think about this. What about the Suspiria remake?
Yeah?
I like that.
I'll watch both, actually.
Okay,
yeah, that's good.
I'll watch it with the subtitles. I'll watch it with the subtitles this time and not just try and guess what they're saying in German.
The remake, yeah. Okay. That is on Netflix or Prime. It's definitely
it's
on there,
Prime.
Isn't it?
It's on Prime.
Yeah, I'm up for watching that. Jess, you all right with that?
Yeah, that's fine.
It's a lot of dancing and things. Okay, so our episode...
That's the synopsis on the
dancing and weird stuff. So
that'll be next week's introduction.
Yes. Suspiria. You want to follow us on Facebook, Bones Horror Podcast, on Twitter, Bones Horror Pod, Instagram, Bones Horror Pod. If you want to send us an email, tell us to stop doing it or whatever. It's the boneshorrorpod at gmail.com. I'm not sure if we'll be back next week. We need reviews. They come in handy. We had our biggest week ever in the last week. I'll talk to you about it after the podcast, guys. But lots of German listeners. Why? I do not know. But there was a lot. So we appreciate it. It was a massive week for us. We'll be back, well, soon, hopefully. Hopefully it won't be a month, with Suspiria. Mm-hmm. I'll see you all later then.
Bye.
Bye.
Goodbye.
Ha ha ha!